With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. The Fred West tapes. Secrets of the Fred and Rose West murder investigation. It's a chilling new book from the senior producer of Fred and Rose West, a British horror story, which is now available on Netflix. It is by Howard Soons. I hope I'm pronouncing that the correct way. It's probably not Sounds. Howard, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Did I get your surname right? I hate to get that wrong to begin with.
Soons, S-O-U-N-E-S.
Soons, good morning to you. It is perhaps the most chilling, shocking murder case of British history in the past half 50 years to a century itself. What particularly, if attracted is the right word, has drawn you to discovering more about Fred and Rose West?
Well, I've worked on the story for 30 years since I helped break the story as a journalist in 1994. I wrote the original book, which was a big bestseller. In the last few years, I obtained access to all the police interviews with Fred West, which have never been heard. We turned that into a Netflix series, which has been an international hit. And this book is the book, really, of those interviews. And it's a new, completely new look at the case via Fred's police interviews in the interview room as the case unraveled.
What, I mean, in a world where we are sort of besieged, if you like, by true crime dramas, and seems to be an always morbid fascination in serial killers, a glamorization, if you like, of killers. One of the things that was so chilling, perhaps, of the Fred and Rose West case was the, you can call it the banality of evil, because this looked like a very ordinary. This wasn't an outsider. This wasn't a loner. This was a happily married couple, apparently, in a nondescript suburban location. Howard.
Yeah, I mean, the really remarkable thing about Fred and Rose West and why they are almost unique is that they're a husband and wife who killed together as part of their marriage for sexual pleasure. And they do that for many, many years in their home in the middle of an English city, the city of Gloucester. The address was 25 Cromwell Street, infamously. And so most serial killers are men, very few are women. And for a husband and wife to do it together is almost unheard of. So it's super unusual and very weird in its details.
And I mean, take us back to 1994. I mean, I was living in the UK at the time. I remember that. And it almost came on the back of two or three other landmark cases. One was the Stephen Lawrence case. And then, of course, there was the James Bulger case as well. And it seemed at that point, in a pre-internet world, that, and I know that the press have always said, what is going on, state of the nation, etc. But it was a very, very strange time, wasn't it, Howard?
Well, it was a long time ago. I mean, it was certainly before the internet. It was before mobile phones. And I worked for a newspaper that sold 2.5 million copies a day. That paper now sells less than 200,000 copies a day. When the book was published, we sold 60,000 copies in a week, but those numbers don't pertain anymore because the world's been digitalized and old fashioned print media is really, not what it was. The case was remarkable. It was a period when there were several remarkable cases. Harold Shipman, the Dr. Death, was just after it. But, in the long history of crime, very few cases endure in the public imagination. Jack the Ripper, Ian Brady and Myra Hindley, the Moors murders, Fred and Rose West. And the ones that endure are because they are in some way unique and because the perpetrators have a kind of macabre charisma. and Fred and Rose were weird characters. Mm. And when you hear the tapes or when you read the book, when you hear read what Fred said, speaking as a countryman with his idiosyncratic Herefordshire speech, very banal, matter of fact, but also incredibly graphic discussions of sex and violence and murder and torture and rape. And really, it's absolutely eye-popping. To this day, there's nothing quite like it.
I mean, is it the fact that perhaps he views himself with the actions almost in the third person? I mean, we talk about out-of-body experiences, but is it in the way he describes, you said graphically, I mean, it's only 10:45 here or 10:45 here, so I don't want to go too far into that thing. But is it almost like he's describing as if it was somebody else?
Well, not really. I mean, the truth is that he enjoyed what he did, and he was conscious enough of what he did to hide it. So he was—he wasn't in. Well, there is a debate about whether he was sane or insane. But you can also see that when he talks about the murders, there is a sense of him enjoying himself. And at one point in the interviews, the police officer says, she suddenly realizes something. She says, "You're enjoying this, aren't you, Fred?" And he says, "Yeah, yeah." And she says, "Why? I can't understand it." And he says gnomically, "Oh, you will in the end." So there is, I mean, it's not unusual for criminals to enjoy their crimes and to enjoy revisiting their crimes. But very rarely do they talk like Fred did. I mean, I've got over 100 hours of Fred West talking. It took me months to transcribe and to create the book. I mean, months of listening to his voice every day for months, for hours every day. And mostly criminals say no comment. Fred didn't say no comment. Fred said, "I'll tell you the whole story." But he didn't tell it in a straight way. He told it with lies and truth all mixed up. And so you go on this journey trying to unpick the truth from the lies.
I mean, is it almost some sort of sick game for him, that him and Rose then? I mean, they enjoy what they do. They get gratification, both sexual and physical, out of this. You know, Rose partakes in this. She's not an unwilling partner and under fear of her life here. She gets involved with it. I mean, is it to them almost a continuation, because they're so disconnected from the real world, quote unquote, that they view themselves outside the normal human experience?
I don't know. I mean, in some ways they're very ordinary, in some ways they're extraordinary, and they're very different. I mean, Rose in her interviews does say no comment, and indeed she turned against Fred and blamed Fred. So in their marriage they were as close as you can be. I mean, there was 25 years of a absolutely intimate relationship. But once they were arrested, Fred confessed to try to save Rose, but Rose turned against Fred and to save herself. And so they became at loggerheads. So interesting, very different characters. Rose was a very different personality to Fred. Fred was very outgoing, chatty, talkative, told jokes, chatted women up. I mean, very crude, vulgar man, you know, and horrible man in every respect. But Rose was a different person, said next to nothing, very angry, frustrated sort of woman. The kind of woman you'd avoid if you bumped into her in the street. She was odd. Oh. She dressed like a schoolgirl when she was middle-aged. Fred was a very different sort of person. But in both respects, they were covering up for their true life, and their true life was the life of child abusers and murderers, which took place under their roof. And sadly, victims included their own children.
When did you become aware? I mean, when were you allowed access to these tapes then, these audio tapes? And what's it like going back and hearing that voice as if he was sitting in the room just across from you now?
Well, a really powerful experience. I mean, I've been working on this case for many years, so I know many of the people involved. And I come into possession of these tapes, and there's hundreds of these tapes, cassette tapes. I had to digitize them, and in the process I had to transcribe them. And so I had his voice in my ear, and very powerful. He spoke in this very deep countryman voice, like a sort of farm laborer, which indeed he was in his by background. Herefordshire dialogue, quaint phrases. I mean, he's not an angry man. He never swears, never loses his temper, uses all sorts of quaint phrases like going for a shandy, for a drink. You know, he's got all sorts of odd things he says. And it is really fascinating because as you listen to him intently for hours and hours, you see this curious character who's in a world of his own in many respects, but he's also half confessing, half avoiding the truth, but revealing all these extraordinary snippets of his life, his childhood, his relationship with his parents, his early sex life, his murders, he describes the murders in really incredible detail, like a horror story. But he's not telling the whole truth. And then I go and interview many other people. I have access to other documents. So, for instance, we reveal that Fred got his sister pregnant when she was 13 and he was 19. That was his first serious crime. He raped his sister and got her pregnant. And that was the start of it, way back in the, you know, in the 60s.
This is a sort of story, and I've interviewed people who've interviewed serial killers before, and this is not the sort of story that you go home at 5 o'clock and you turn the lights off and that's done, Howard. This obviously has stayed with you for 30 years, and I should imagine how do you deal with this, and B, how do the forces of law and order deal with it? Because again, if you're sitting there as a police officer. We now know about Fred and Rose West, but at the time, this is a story that we just keeps growing horrendously and twistedly, growing and growing and growing. And with the best of respects to Gloucester, sleepy sort of West Country town, as you said, nice country people and a delightful borough to their voices. I mean, how do you deal with this 30 years later? And how are the police handling this who are interviewing Fred and Rose?
Well, I think when it first started way back for me and the police, it was a shock. And what I was shocked, I mean, I was shocked to think people were capable of torture for pleasure. I mean, it's something out of medieval, almost like medieval torture. Really, it's sickeningly sickening in its detail. And I was really shocked that such things happened in real life. But I'm sure the police were shocked. Indeed, in the interviews, you can hear the police shocked. I mean, one of the officers says to Fred, he says, "What? You cut her head off?" And Fred says, "Yeah, I cut her head off." You know, he's completely matter of fact about it. But of course, it's an absolutely bizarre fact. But the truth is, over time, you get used to it, right? So, you know, if you work on this, you know, over time and quite quickly, actually, over a period of months, you get used to these facts and you live with it. And I'm not, and now the shock has long since gone for me, and I'm sure for all the police involved. And of course, you can turn it off. I mean, I don't have nightmares about it. I mean, it doesn't get into my life in that way, but in a subtle way, it is part of your life. And I'm sure it does affect you in ways that one can't recognize.
Again, we go back to this thing where it is always the killers' names that we remember and never the victims. Did you speak to victims' families, friends? Because obviously this is devastating. Yeah. It is bad enough to lose somebody in one way, awful to lose them in a murder. And then these details get out, you know, this perversity, and I do mean that in the correct way, and almost the sacrilege, you know, the way they dispose of the bodies is just as you said, it's medieval. It goes back to dark ages, isn't it, really?
Yeah, so indeed, I have got to know some of the victim families, and some of them are in the book, and the children who are also victims. And one of those children speaks exclusively in the book. And yeah, the stories are heartbreaking. I mean, for instance, Lucy Partington is one of the victims, and she goes missing in 1973. And her family have no idea what happens to her. 20 years later, they suddenly discover that she's been dead all these years in Fred West's cellar. And they have to get their head around that. And then they've never had a funeral. And so finally, the bones are recovered. And the bones are returned to them in a cardboard box, and they are bones. And suddenly Marianne, Lucy's sister, tells me the story. I mean, she has to hold her sister's skull in her hand 20 years after she went missing, more than 20 years. And actually, that's just the start of it, right? So that's just the start of it, because then you realize, then the family have the realization of what happened to Lucy. They never knew what happened to Lucy. They had all sorts of theories. Maybe she ran away. Maybe she met somebody. Who knows what happened to her? She disappeared one day from a bus stop. Now they know what happened to her, and it's the worst possible knowledge to live with. And then they have to live with that for all the years that follow. And Barry, just to go to Barry, the son, the youngest son, I mean, he was literally, this is Fred and Rose's youngest son, whose his story is in the book for the first time. He was driven insane by it. Insane.
I mean, does Barry have any idea what's going on? I mean, it's massively dysfunctional family. We know this, to put it mildly, but yeah. You know, I mean, and it's this thing of horrors. And as you said, when one of their own children is a victim, but I mean, was he too young? Does he have not? Is there something? Is there don't go down to the cellar? You know, in the Hollywood parlance. I mean, how on earth do you live with the burden of being, you know, a child of killers?
Well, I mean, it ruined his life. I mean, sadly, he's now deceased. He died a couple of years ago. He developed mental health problems and a drug problem. The case lived with him every day of his life. So every day of his life, he lived with the case. He lived under a different name, and yet he spoke about the case endlessly. He spoke about, well, to me, I mean, to everyone, he spoke about the case just all the time. He talked about growing up in the house. He talked about witnessing, he claimed, the murder of one of his siblings, which may or may not be true. But certainly what was true was that he was physically and sexually abused by his family, by his parents. And then he was damaged psychologically by it in an absolutely profound way, to the extent that he could never live a normal life. And it's a very sad story. So he came to me a few years ago to ask me if I could help him tell his story, because he wanted to share his story. And then we went on this process to do that. And the story is now finally in the book. But in the meantime, sadly, he died of a drug overdose.
When it comes to making this into a documentary, you've written the book and then you've got the new information. How do you, as a journalist, documentary maker, obviously the way of reportage has changed in the 30 years plus. How do you put the angle on it so it's not, it's shocking, but there shouldn't be shock value? Do you see what I'm saying here, Harry? It shouldn't be sensation. Yeah, yeah. It shouldn't be, ooh, because there's a certain pornography in the way that some crime is especially now is reported.
Well, when I wrote the first book in 1995, Fred and Rose, and I was a tabloid journalist, but when I wrote the book, I took a decision to write the book in a very different style to, let's say, the tabloid papers. Yeah. Tabloid papers, of course, deal in sensation, but I take the books very seriously. And so when I wrote the book, the book was absolutely without any exaggeration, no hyperbole, you know, the minimum number of adjectives. I mean, the thing was just the facts. These are the facts, folks. But having said that, I think it's very important to tell the readers the truth. And the forensic evidence actually reveals the truth. Now, when we come to make television programs, and I've produced several programs about this case, including the Netflix film, television broadcasters don't want, they believe that their viewers don't want the graphic details, that it's too shocking. Now, I'm personally of a different opinion, and I think it's very important that people know the truth. Because only when you know the truth about what happened to the bodies, that the remains were dismembered, that there are body parts missing, etc., only then do you really understand what Fred and Rose did. And if you don't know that, then there's room for error and for thinking that Rose was a different person to the person that she really is. So some people, for instance, think that Rose is purely a victim of all of this, which is nonsense. And I think some people don't. I mean, I think when we think of murder, we tend to think in terms of drama and, you know, people being bumped over the head and being found in corridors, like Agatha Christie type Midsummer Murder, Inspector Morse. But murder isn't like that. You know, murder is desperate, often sexually motivated and, you know, incredibly ugly. And for Fred and Rose to do that for pleasure, that's the thing you have to get your head around. They did that for pleasure, not for expediency usually. And they did it together for pleasure as part of their marriage, as part of their love affair, perversely, is really where you have to think. So if you're interested in human psychology, so really all these books are really studies in psychology. So the people themselves, Fred and Rose, are extraordinary, and that's why they're worth talking about and thinking about. They're behaving way beyond the boundaries of normal behavior, and it really happened, and that can tell you a lot about what we are as human beings, I think.
The you get, if I was saying, you know, what would you hope people take from the book? But that's not applying this one, because there's no lessons. Are there any lessons to be learned from this, Howard? Is it? I mean,
there were certainly many missed opportunities to stop the West. And one of the things is that they carried on for over 20 years. So the first murder is 67, the last is 87, and they weren't apprehended until 94. So looking back, there were many missed opportunities. So that's one thing always worth bearing in mind.
The book is called The Fred West Tapes, Secrets of the Fred and Rose West Murder Investigation. It's now on Netflix as well. It's by Howard Sounds, who is speaking today. Howard, if people want to find you online, do you have a social media presence? Have you have an official website? Where's the best place for people to find about more, apart from obviously buying the book and seeing the Netflix the programs?
Well, if you just Google me, it's Howard Soons, S-O-U-N-E-S. It's an unusual name, and you'll see me, and you'll see the book and the audio book, and I've made a podcast series, and I've written many other books as well on very different subjects. And some people may know me as the biographer of Bob Dylan, which is a very different kettle of fish, but also quite a well-known book.
Yes, indeed. Well, the book, thank you very much for your time. The book is called The Fred West Tapes by Howard Soons. Howard, thank you so much for your time today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.